Do you ever dream about flying? I love those dreams, just gliding along high above the ground. Both Patty Miller and her brother used to dream about flying as kids, but their dreams took them in very different directions. And at first glance, they could not be more different people. But as Patty learned, their disparate passions in life left a window open for them to reconnect. Her new book is called The Joy of High Places. Patty Miller, welcome to Life Matters.
Thanks, Hilary. It's great to be here.
Now, this will not be a discussion entirely about dream interpretation. We'll get to the real life events. But tell us first, what was your dream of flying like when you were growing up?
When I was a child, I dreamed of flying over the farm. We all grew up on a farm. In fact, all of my family dreamed of flying, I realised.
Years later.
But mine was flying above the farm in a kind of crouching position. But I believed they were real, and I still have a suspicion they were real because I knew what things looked like from above, what fences and sheds and paddocks looked like from above. So I'm feeling that there was something happening.
And you felt it was a bit effortful and not, you know, necessarily free and easy, but your brother's dreams were a bit different.
Yes, his were different because I asked him about this as many decades later. I didn't know all my brothers and sisters were also flying around the farm, but he said he swam upwards as if almost through water from the bottom of a pool. So he kind of swam up into the air and then floated along with his arms out and sometimes swooped and soared and nearly came down to the ground and soared up again. And he said he remembers teaching two of our brothers to fly as well. So it was a very kind of involving experience for him, more effortless than my flying.
And it sounds like there were these differences in your dream styles, but also differences in your personalities. What was life like for you as a young
person? I was one of eight, and I had five brothers. So he was one of them, an older brother. And he was a very reserved, distant, very methodical, very sensible, very tidy, but he had to share the bedroom with all the other boys. But the tide of mess and shoes and toys and things stopped at his bed, and there was an invisible line of tidiness. And so I was one of the disorderly ones, and so we didn't really connect to each other. I was someone who was a more disorganized kind of person. I read a lot. I was more sort of chaotic, I guess, in my general approach to things. And his was a more disciplined, sensible, orderly kind of approach, which meant as we grew older, I didn't really have much to do with him. In fact, I didn't see him hardly at all for decades, which is strange when it's your own brother. But when you grow up in a big family, I think there's a lot of missed connections, I think.
And then later on, you discovered that he had parlayed this yearning for flight into actual flight. What happened?
Well, I was astonished. I couldn't believe it. You know, this very sensible, orderly person one day stepped off the side of a mountain with just a piece of plastic keeping him up, basically. I mean, that's what a paraglider is. It's a piece of plastic with string on it, really, and it's up to you to make it keep its shape and form and keep you up. And I remember thinking, even feeling a little bit resentful, you know, how come he was the wild free one, you know, stepping off the side of mountains, soaring and gliding. And I couldn't quite believe it, you know. And then one day when he was down visiting, I live in Sydney and he lives in the North Coast, and I asked him politely about what flying was like, and his face changed. He started glowing, and he started talking about, you know, the great joy and delight and swooping like a bird and the peace and the union with nature and chatting to eagles. And I was like, who is this person? I've never met you before. It was extraordinary. It was like a different being that was within him that I hadn't ever realised that was there.
And your book is full of this lovely kind of tension between the joy of this discovery and gradually getting to know this brother, and a sadness, I think, about not having understood each other for so long.
Yes, it's strange because I still feel like that. I feel like I'm rediscovering him all the time now, even since the book's come out. You know, I gave it to him on the Friday night when I was in Brisbane, and on Monday night he rang me up and said that you know, he was so glad that I'd written it because he wouldn't be able to do it himself, and told me a lot of things about himself. So it was very personal and intimate. But at the same time, I realised that we actually hold on to our judgments of other people, especially in families. We all have roles, and they're very simple kind of stick figure roles, really, you know, and he had to stick to his role and I had to stick to mine. And now that he'd shifted in his role, I was realising there was even a little bit of resentment, you know, that because it meant that I had to change as well, you know, that I had been wrong in my judgments of him. And it is delightful, but it also means, you know, I have to open my heart to this new person as well.
Well, and as we learned throughout the book, you and Barney learnt a lot about vulnerability as time went on. But let's go to the middle section, I guess, where you have chosen a different path. Quite literally, you have chosen this much more earthbound method of connecting with the land and connecting with yourself. So you're walking a lot while Barney is learning to fly.
Yes, well, I started long distance walking about 7 years ago. I've been walking all my life, especially growing up on the farm. I'd walk across the farm and other people's farms and always trying to find treasure or something wonderful.
Sucking nectar from the nectar flowers.
Yes, or a kangaroo bone or sometimes even a rubbed stone that had been used by the indigenous people, all sorts of things you'd find as you're walking. But about 7 years ago, I started long distance walking, and by that I mean hundreds and hundreds of kilometres, and mainly in Europe. And that's because they have places to stay along the way, very simple refuges, they call them, or hostels or gîtes or something like that, because I'm not keen on actually carrying the stove and the bed and kitchen sink on my back. I love the pleasure of walking at that connection to nature, that very slow, intimate connection to the world, but I'm not keen on struggling under a big pack. So I walk in Europe a lot. But that happened at the same time as something that happened to my brother.
And so Barney was discovering this joy, this opening up of himself, this oneness with nature. What does walking give to you? Because it sounds like it's a sensory experience, it's an emotional experience,
yes,
it's a bit of everything.
It's very much in the body for a start. It's connecting to your body, to the pain of your body as well as the delight of it. And that's as someone who's lived a lot in her head, it was quite a new experience for me. I'd never been the action-adventure woman. You know, when I look at photographs of myself now, like striding in the Alps, you know, at Mont Blanc in the snow with these boots, and I think, is that really me? You know, I'm not really that action-adventure person. So it was that connection to nature and to the challenge of difficult physical things, which I had never connected to before. I didn't know why people did those sorts of things. But there's also that kind of connection to nature where you're observing very close up the trees, the rocks, the plants, the path in front of you. And there's also a kind of joy that comes. And I want to say spiritual joy, but I'm not a religious person, but it feels like that kind of the ribs expanding, the heart wanting to burst out of its body. So there's that thing. And I think it sounds very much like the same thing that happens to Barney. But there's also a creative thing that happens where my brain starts floating. And I actually think it's very like writing for me. There's the same kind of people call it diverse thinking that happens when your busy brain stops working all the time, and it allows that diverse brain to start coming up with creative connections between things. So it's good for writing as well.
And so a couple of weeks out from a big trip to Europe that you had planned, something terrible happened to Barney. What was that?
Yes, he was he'd been flying for about 5 or 6 years by then, so he was very competent. He's a very methodical, sensible person. He is not rash, even though he steps off the side of mountains. And but one day he was flying, and there wasn't enough updraft to get a good flight, going from cloud to cloud, which are called cloud streets, I found out, when there's a row of clouds. And he came in to land. But just before he landed, he was caught in a whirlwind or dust devil, a very fast, powerful updraft, which shot him up about the height of a four-story building, and his wings collapsed with the updraft, and he shot straight down feet first. and broke his spine in four places. And he was lying on the ground and the wind picked his wing up and dragged him about 40 or 50 metres with a broken spine, which is unthinkable, just unthinkable. And he was flown to Princess Alexandra Hospital in Brisbane, I think. And the surgeon operated, taking one of the vertebrae were burst, and the surgeon operated to take the splinters out of his spine and said, "You very well might not walk again. In the operation, you might also lose your sight, but this is what we can do. And you might walk again, but only with crutches." But he didn't reckon with my very determined and very methodical brother, who made up his mind to walk again and he would head off.
But he did that in a very Barney way, it sounds like.
Yes.
He took it easy in certain cases. He paced himself. He knew that he'd pay for it later.
Yes.
And he eventually not only walked, but he went back to paragliding. What
yes.
was that like
yes.
for you to hear that happened?
Yes, I couldn't believe it. My jaw still drops when I think about it, actually, that he did that. You know, he started methodically training in going down to the park again, because he had no control over his lower legs. There were still no nerves working in his lower legs, which meant that he couldn't control his ankles. So it meant that he couldn't even walk on a slope, you know, the slope that comes from people's driveways. He couldn't walk on those. He had to step onto the road and walk around them. So he had to train his upper leg muscles to hold himself steady and all that kind of thing. So he trained, and then one day he went back to the same mountain where he had stepped off before, and everybody was terrified. All the family was terrified. But he said to me that he couldn't live and not fly. It was that important to him. And I actually asked him very recently, because all this time, even interviewing him, talking to him, and to write this book, I thought it was something he did every couple of weeks. You know, that's what people do. But he said three or four times a week. And I thought, what? It's actually your whole life. It is what you do. You fly. That's your life.
So you wrote these amazing parallel stories, Patty Miller, in The Joy of High Places. And you write that when you showed him what you'd written, when you emailed it off, there was an alarming delay on his response. And when he did reply, you write that it was like you were meeting him for the first time. How did that play out?
Absolutely. I did send him the chapters that were mainly about him. I mean, he's dotted throughout the book, my brother Barney, but there's some pieces which are specifically about him. And I sent them to him. And I was very nervous because I was very honest about what I'd thought of him, the judgments I'd made of him, the kind of person I thought he was. And I also indicated that it wasn't just me, that it was the whole family who thought those things about him. And He normally answered me when I asked him questions on that day or the next day, being a very methodical, sensible person. And he didn't reply for several days. And I became more and more terrified that he would say, "That's it. There's no way. I'm not going to let you say those things. I'm pulling the plug on this book." And then I got this letter from him, this email from him, and he said, "Look, I know how I'm seen. I actually realise that people think those things about me," he said, "because I've always operated on a need-to-know basis." And it made me laugh because he sounded like he was a spy in the world, you know, that he let people know certain things. He was very conscious of that. But he also said, you know, that he hadn't had a lot to say about things because he hadn't found what it was that liberated him. And I felt really moved, you know, that I'd actually met him and had started to get to know who he was for the first time. And it's made me think about everybody that I know, you know, and all the judgments that we have of each other and what a narrow kind of parameter we have around people, you know. But really, they're a whole human being just like us walking around.
And there's this beautiful moment in the book where you say, "Oh, I didn't realise how much pain you were in, Barney. How has that been? It would make me very angry." And you get a surprising response.
Yes. I hadn't realised, you know, because he didn't mention it. He would sit there quietly and he hadn't mentioned it. And one day it just sort of happened in passing. And this was after I'd been talking to him for a while about this as well. And yes, so he was often in extraordinary pain, but he managed it by concentrating on part of his body that wasn't in pain, say his hands, which I thought was just extraordinary.
And he's opened himself up to people and vulnerability and the vulnerability, fact that we need each other.
Yes.
It's an amazing set of stories, Patty Miller.
Yes.
Thanks so much for coming into Life Matters to chat with us today.
Thank you. It's been wonderful.
Patty Miller is a writer. This is her eighth book. It's called The Joy of High Places. And you're listening to Life Matters on the Earth and in the Ether here on RN.